I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, public records reveal the disdain some Washington state Democrats have for Second Amendment protections. Plus, an Undivided exclusive, parents in Bellingham were shocked to learn how early gender ideology is being pushed on kids. And a Seattle apartment complex for rainbow seniors raises serious questions about legality. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you could support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A little bit of a manic Wednesday around here at the Undivided Studios. No big deal. Whenever we start the show 1 minute late, I love the guesses in the live chat about what it is that's keeping us. My hair, no. My hair looks good, as you can see. Laptop, nope. Brought it today. It's just we had a couple good exclusives that we wanted to work on and fit into the show, and so they were very time intensive today. But we got to get into you. So yes, I know there was no subscriber show poll this morning. The morning got away from me in favor of very important things in the show. And so I'll tell you what, I'll give you a bonus one on Friday. I'll poll y'all on Friday on how you thought the Trump-Biden debate went. Okay, how does that sound? Bonus one. All right, there is a tweet that we've probably shared on this show more than any single tweet ever. It's because it terrifies me to the core. And I think it should terrify every single Washingtonian, every single freedom-loving person, every single person who believes that the power is inherent in the people and the government is supposed to work for us. And that is the tweet from the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad, where she shared her dream, her vision for what she wanted to do with the state of Washington if Democrats achieve supermajorities. I'll just remind you of the tweet. With supermajorities, we can clean up the Constitution. My goal for 2026 sends a shiver down my spine. And the truth is, as some have pointed out, that goal might not even take until 2026. It's very possible if Republicans don't have a good year, if voters don't see the disaster and the danger of one-party rule, that they could reach supermajorities or certainly strengthen their existing majorities here in November of 2024. Now, I have shown that tweet a lot because I think about what they'll do, right? What are you going to clean up from the state constitution? And certainly you look at bills that they've been this close to passing in Olympia, and you just know that if there's no resistance, they're just going to push those things through. I mean, the sky is truly the limit. You know, rent control that they couldn't pass this year, that's a done deal if they strengthen their majorities. Pay for striking workers, that's a done deal if they strengthen their majorities. Pushing through an unconstitutional tax on your income, despite all the protections in place against it, they might just think that they can get away with it with supermajorities. The other thing you can be rest assured that they will try to do is further erode your Second Amendment rights. Now, I have said of the Second Amendment, it's not an amendment that I use on a regular basis, if ever, but I make my living off the First Amendment, and a government that would erode protections in other amendments is a government that would erode the protections that I enjoy from our Constitution. So I'll fight for the Second Amendment just as hard as I'd fight for the First Amendment. And I think everyone who values the Constitution should do the same. Now, if you want to change the Second Amendment, fine. There is a reason our founding fathers built in a process to change the amendments, to add amendments, to get rid of amendments. And if Americans on the whole really want to go ahead and change the Second Amendment or abolish it or put something different on the books, they can do that. It's difficult. It takes a lot of consensus, but they can do it. And if that's what they choose to do, who am I to say that that's the wrong thing if it's the consensus of the majority of Americans and states? So I really think that if we have strengthened Democratic majorities, they're going to really try to push the limit on eroding your Second Amendment rights. And it's not just me that thinks that. They're saying it behind the scenes. So there was a really good public records request and some documents obtained by a guy named Michael Easton. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael Easton Waugh. He's basically a citizen sleuth, and he does a lot of good public records requests. So he put in a request. This was quite the doozy of a request, and he's getting the records back slowly, as you can imagine, because the request that he put in He filed it, I think, in earlier this year. So it wasn't that long ago, but he's still waiting for all the installments. He asked for all Microsoft Teams communications for all Democrat members of the Senate dating from January 1st, 2019 to March 11th, 2024. That is a hell of a public records request. You know, I complain sometimes that they take too long. It's because my requests are narrow in scope. Like, if this one took a year or so, I'd be like, eh, that's understandable. So he wanted, wasn't even about anything specific. Give me all the Teams messages sent back and forth between Democratic members of the Washington State Senate in that four-year, five-year time frame. And again, all the credit in the world to Michael Easton. I highly recommend that you follow his Twitter account because he does not only public records requests, but he posts all the information publicly. So you can click on the link. You can see all the raw data for yourself. He's doing a good one right now on State Senator Marco Elias and all his travel spending and adding all that up. So if you're just a huge nerd for government accountability, it's a good Twitter account to follow. So these records start coming out, and he's only gotten the tip of the iceberg for these records he requested, as you can imagine. He's got records back for Teams messages that originate from just a couple Democratic state senators. But even those messages, when lawmakers believe that they can just chat in Teams back and forth amongst each other, even those are very telling about their priorities and about some of what their goals are in eroding the Second Amendment, but also the lack of knowledge they have about gun laws. You know, here they are really nonstop for the last 10 years trying to erode Second Amendment rights. And it's shocking to me the lack of basic knowledge they have about gun rights. I'll give you an example. This is a Teams message from Senator Andy Billig, who, you know, announced his retirement this past year, but he was the Senate Majority Leader, one of the most powerful Democrats in Olympia. This is a Teams message he sent, and this is a chat amongst a lot of Democratic senators. On June 16th, 2022, he said, so this is in the middle of the summer, right? They're talking about, hey, what are we going to introduce in the upcoming legislative session? And he tosses this out there. Is there discussion of a bill that would raise the age to buy a handgun to 21? Now, if you know anything about our gun rights, you know what's wrong with that. It already is 21. You already have to be 21 to purchase a handgun in Washington State. You know, there are some slight exemptions to that at the federal level, but that is obviously a glaring issue that one of the most powerful Democrats in Olympia doesn't realize that, or didn't realize at the time, that the age to buy a handgun was already 21. Senator Christine Rolfes reminded him of that in the chat. Andy, I think the handgun age is 21 already. I think, I'm not sure, but like, I think maybe she was just trying to be nice. Like, hey, aren't you the majority leader? Why don't you know this when we're talking about gun laws? So that just gives you, I think, the an understanding of how uninformed they are. And I'll be honest, you know, back when I was covering just politics and crime and stuff as a mainstream journalist, you know, there would be stories that would come up every now and again about gun laws. And I admittedly didn't know a lot about guns. You know, when they talk about so-called assault rifles or semi-automatic assault rifles, and what would I do? Well, I'd pick up the phone and I'd ask someone who knew something about guns to explain it to me like I was 5 years old. And I had no shame in that because I don't want to get on TV and act like or sound like a moron talking about guns. And you're telling me that Senator Andy Billig couldn't do the same? Like, hey, as we're considering gun control legislation, why don't I ask some very basic questions or gain some very basic knowledge about what gun rights and gun laws there already are? So then things get, I think, a little more nefarious and unhinged, where you see the true disdain they have for guns in general and for the Second Amendment protections. This is a message from Senator Annette Cleveland to the group. Studies have shown that merely seeing a gun can increase aggression. From February 26, 2021, so they're in the middle of the legislative session, there are some conversations happening behind the scenes about open carry, and she says studies have shown that merely seeing a gun can increase aggression. Nicole, when you see a gun, does it increase your aggression?
No.
Oh, interesting.
That's not how
wow, I don't
respond.
Know. You know, and before I get to, it's also funny, if you could put that back up, Senator Rebecca Saldana, her response was to Senator Annette Cleveland, I always love when you bring the data to back up the point. Like, all she said is studies have shown. Where's the data there? I want to know more about this study. I want to know more about the data set. And if The simple act of seeing someone open carrying a gun increases your aggression. My thought is that you have probably some mental health issues. And like, yeah, maybe you're not someone who ought to have a firearm. It's just fascinating, this world they live in. So there's this interesting message. This, again, is February 26, 2021. As they're talking about, this is in the middle of a session, right? Senator Steve Hobbs, now the Secretary of State, who was in the Senate at the time, he pipes in to this chat about the gun bill they're discussing. He says, I hope this is the last gun bill for this session. And he was a very moderate Democrat at the time. I think he still is. He says, I'm getting swamped with emails from my constituents, angry with this bill and others. Please remember, we don't all live in dark blue districts. I have to explain myself on this vote, and it's not as easy as you might think. Instead of, I don't know, understanding where he's coming from, like, hey, I get it, you know, thanks for sharing that, we'll keep that in mind, Senator Marco Elias sends a snarky response in Teams, this is the first gun bill. As if, what do you mean, no more gun bills this session? This is the first one that we're discussing. Like, no care or concern for what Senator Hobbs is trying to say there, and like, look, this isn't popular everywhere. I have to answer to my constituents. Taking these votes is not as easy as you might think. Senator Elias, this is the first gun bill. Question mark too. How catty. He knows it's the first gun bill. He's like, this is the first gun bill. Just ridiculous. Now, here is the one that I saw of all the ones I've reviewed thus far. And again, just the tip of the iceberg for this public records request that Michael Easton put in. And this is the one that directly speaks to me to the kinds of things that Democrats will do, will attempt to do if they're able to strengthen their majorities and, God forbid, reach supermajorities. This is something thrown into a Teams chat so cavalierly, which is shocking when you consider its contents, by Senator Mona Doss. Again, all these are Democrats. Someone reached out to me to introduce a bill banning the sale of all firearm ammunition in Washington State. So she doesn't name who that person was, but someone reached out to her and said, hey, what about introducing a bill banning the sale of all firearm ammunition in Washington State? She goes on to write to her Democratic colleagues. He said, quote, by making ammo harder to get and more expensive, that can address the problem without directly raising Second Amendment questions. That shows the disdain they have for the Second Amendment. And it also proves something that we know to be true, which is a lot of the laws that they pass are designed to try to circumvent the Second Amendment, like a bill they passed this past legislative session that adds all these burdensome requirements onto gun shops to increase their security, to increase their video monitoring, to make it more laborious for their employees when it comes to taking guns out, putting guns in, how the guns need to be locked up, the material of their front doors, what's over their window, things that will put a lot of gun shops out of business, period. Because, you know, for instance, they want them to have all these cameras set up in these specific locations in gun shops and then store all that data for a really long time. Well, storing that much video data costs a lot of money. So in that bill, no question, what they're trying to do is make it so expensive to run a lawful gun shop that there simply aren't gun shops around for people to legally purchase firearms. So that's the same sentiment here from Mona Doss, where she's saying, hey, somebody's asking me to introduce a bill to just ban the sale of all firearm ammunition. So basically, your gun becomes a worthless hunk of metal. If you can't import the ammunition, you can't buy it locally, your gun is completely useless. But it also shows, again, the misunderstanding that she has. You can't, I mean, reasonable courts that care about the Constitution realize that you can't render an amendment to the Constitution useless by virtue of other policies that you pass. Our constitutional protections have to be meaningful. So this is something that, at least in a sane court of law, would absolutely never stand up, because it is something that renders the Second Amendment completely useless to a populace. So it just shows they don't really care that much for whether the bills or the laws or the proposals that they're pushing through are constitutional. Like, they'll do it anyway and just hope that they get some sort of good judge and a good court like the Washington State Supreme Court, and then the high court never takes it up. But, you know, I wouldn't put this past them to try something like this. Again, you look at what they've done with gun shops already, which is blatantly just to try to get around the Second Amendment. They have a real misunderstanding of our constitutional protections and what's constitutional. Either a misunderstanding or they just don't care. I don't know which one it is. I think both. I mean, you look at Andy Billig saying, oh, why don't we introduce a bill? Like, this is a great idea. Why don't we introduce a bill to ban the sale of handguns until you're 21? It's like, no idea whatsoever. But this is just some of the things that they discuss behind the scenes. A small, small fraction of the records, the records that Michael Easton has requested. And I certainly look forward to seeing what other sort of things were pushed behind the scenes, not only on the Second Amendment front, but also on crime, public safety. I imagine there are some really good Microsoft Teams chats on the whole debate over police pursuits that I very much look forward to seeing. But again, he pushed out this whole data dump on his Twitter account. So I recommend you go peruse it yourself. But on this issue, I thought I saw these and I'm like, we're long overdue to have some conversations about 2A issues in the state of Washington. So William Kirk, you might know him. He's a gun law expert. He's really big on YouTube as well, if you're interested. He is going to join us this week on Sundays with Subscribers to talk about some of the data in these public records, or some of the emails and messages in these public records requests, but also to talk about what he believes could happen in the state of Washington with 2A rights if Democrats reach a supermajority. And what do you see as being maybe next up for Democrats if they get him in the governor's office and strengthen their majorities?
Well, listen, all that Governor Inslee and Attorney General Ferguson have ever wanted to do with this state since they came into power is to make it more Californianized as much as possible. So one need only look as far as the state of California to see what other kind of ludicrous gun laws we have. The first one that they're going to go after, and a lot of people don't get too spun up about this, but this is a big deal, is they want to go ahead and alleviate state preemption laws. And while I know a lot of lawful and responsible gun owners in Washington State aren't real happy about the folks in Olympia making the gun laws, just think what happens when the Seattle City Council gets to start making their own gun laws. And what we'll end up with is this crazy tapestry of varying gun laws. And so as you travel from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, individuals can literally go from being lawful to unlawful to lawful to unlawful as they transcend across the state. And that is one of the really important reasons why we have state preemption laws. And the Democrats are hell-bent on doing away with that. I think we'll see background checks on ammunition implemented. I think we'll probably see a banning on shipping or importing of ammunition that can only be purchased from an FFL, which will exponentially raise the cost for all lawful and responsible gun owners. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of the things they'll try to do.
Yeah, and that's obviously very concerning. So William Kirk with Washington Gun Law is going to join us on Sundays with Subscribers. We're going to talk about some of the existing efforts to rein in 2A rights. We're going to talk about what could happen under a supermajority and also dig into some of this data from Michael Easton that's coming out in these public records requests. So if you'd like to become a subscriber to catch that interview, you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. All right, coming up next, an exclusive report on just how young radical gender ideology is starting in the state of Washington and cities like Bellingham. But first, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I've lost 40 pounds on the program. I've kept it off for a year and a half. And, you know, I know that there's always a lot of fad diets around weight loss. Right now, a lot of people are taking drugs and injections. But then you know what happens. Like, what happens when you stop taking them, right? You just go back to where you were or even worse. So to me, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic worked because it was an easy program to follow, and it was just about eating healthy. I think Nicole has my before and after shot here somewhere. She's looking for it rapidly. It was an easy program for me to follow because it was so structured. And it's 60 days of hard work. Like, yeah, I'm not going to say that it was magic. It's not. It's 60 days of hard work and dedication that forces you to kind of rethink what you're eating and what portions and all of that. And then you make some simple lifestyle changes after that. Yeah, for the rest of your life, you're going to have to make some healthy lifestyle changes to be able to keep the weight off. But I'll tell you, I've heard from so many people who've had fantastic results. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation today at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Ask all the questions you have before you commit to the program. It never ceases to amaze me, you know, how young we're pushing radical gender ideology on kids. You know, we do a lot of stories in this regard, but it's like, gosh, we even have conversations about how can 16 and 17 year olds make these decisions about what gender they think they are, and their minds are still forming. And I'd also note, you know, Democrats, for instance, they want to let juvenile offenders get off with a slap on the wrist for serious crimes like homicide because they say, oh, their brains are still forming. They don't fully understand what they did. And so we can't, you know, put them in prison for long prison terms. But then on the flip side, they're like, yeah, let's let kids, you know, in consultation with their doctors and parents in their teens, let's let them make permanent life-altering changes to their body, because they're definitely mature enough to do that. It makes no sense. So we got a story out of Bellingham, and this one is just crazy to me. So summer months, kids and parents are looking for things for their kids to do, right? It's only so much time you can spend with your kids during the day, so you want to put them in activities. So a mom and a dad in Bellingham thought it would be fun for their six-year-old daughter to participate in just a kind of, City of Bellingham puts it on, but it's just sort of a fun track meet. Like it is, you know, it's a competition, but it is called a Bellingham All-Comers Track, where kids, you know, as young as like 6 years old, they can show up, they can participate in track and field events, just a fun summer activity for kids. So they said, okay, let's sign up our six-year-old daughter for this. She shows up. You know, they're getting the kids in line by age, and they thought by gender, and they've got some signs for the kids to line up to. And then their girl, 6 years old, in the six-year-old girl category, comes up on the track field next to the sign she's supposed to line up next to. And this is what it says. Girls and non-conforming genders, 6 years old. Girls and non-conforming genders, 6 years old. What in the world is wrong with these people? 6 years old. How many six-year-olds out there have non-conforming genders? What in the hell kind of parents are allowing their child at 6 years old to have a non-conforming gender? What kind of six-year-old even knows what the hell a non-conforming gender is? So, like, these parents, they had a good time, you know, taking their daughter to the track meet, but this was understandably upsetting to them. And her dad wrote a letter to the city of Bellingham. Specifically, he wrote a letter to Billy Reeves, who's the Community Enrichment and Special Events Coordinator. And he wrote an email. And the email started off very nice about the all-comers track. Says, Billy, first of all, I would like to let you and your staff know how much the all-comers track meets are appreciated during the summer months. I think these meets give kids and adults a great chance to attend and compete in what I consider the most natural of all sporting events, running, throwing, and jumping against their peers. So this is not a hostile email, not in the slightest. Her dad goes on to say, one thing that I noticed last night, though, has left me scratching my head a bit, and I wanted to get some clarification from you on it. For each of the starting lines, there were strategically placed cones with the age groups with signs that indicated boys on one side, girls on the other. Excellent idea, he said. Keep the cats somewhat herded. However, upon further review of the signs on these cones, it also mentioned and non-conforming genders. I've got to ask, what is this all about? Splitting the girls and boys into two divisions is basic protocol for track. It's been that way forever. I'm not sure what the city of Bellingham is telling these girls that are, in most cases, much smaller and less developed than the boys of the same age, that this is acceptable? That it's okay for a boy to pretend he's a girl to run in the girls' race? Please explain to me how that is fair. He goes on to say, it's my job. I love this dad. I love this dad. It's my job as a father of a daughter to teach her how to learn how to compete in life, run the race, so to speak. But to have the organizing body of this meet tell participants that it's acceptable to cheat to win is not acceptable to me. Maybe I've misunderstood the intent of the city of Bellingham on this, so a clarification from you would be appreciated. At the end of the day, I want to make sure that women's and girls' sports are kept fair. Love this dad. Like, okay, I know it's a six-year-old running a race. You know, I know my daughter is like not in the Olympics right now or in highly competitive high school athletics, but I want her to go compete, and I want to teach her about fairness and also about, yeah, being competitive. Being a little competitive is okay, but how am I supposed to tell her that she has to compete against a boy and that she can't beat him? So, I mean, kudos to this dad. So, again, Billy Reeves, the Community Enrichment and Special Events Coordinator for Bellingham Parks and Recreation, sent back a very brief response. Hi, Tyler. He said, thanks for the kind words about our program. We work very hard to make it an enjoyable experience for our participants. All-comers track and field is designed specifically to be inclusive and welcoming to the entire community, including those with diverse gender identities. And then he sends them a link to the WIAA Gender Diverse Youth Sport Inclusivity Toolkit. He says, it is worth a look if you have additional questions. Thank you. Have a great rest of your day. So totally punts and basically says, we take guidance even for events for six-year-olds from the WIAA Gender Diverse Youth Sport Inclusivity Toolkit, which this isn't even, it doesn't seem a WIAA event. It seems like just something put on for fun in the summer by the city of Bellingham to allow really young kids to get out and be physically active and compete in something. So I went through the WIAA Gender Diverse Youth Sport Inclusivity Toolkit. Wish I could get that 20 minutes of my life back. But it basically says, you know, it gives guidance for schools and really for any athletics in the state of Washington to be inclusive of people of different genders. And the bottom line is it says athletes will participate in programs consistent with their gender identity or the gender most consistently expressed. Or the gender most, so they could flip-flop back and forth, whichever one they most consistently express, that's the gender that they get to participate with. I also thought this was really interesting in case you think that there's any scientific basis for this whatsoever and that this toolkit is rooted in like scientific facts and what makes sense from an athletic perspective. It's not. There's this Q&A section. It says, Lord help us. God bless the broken road. It says, question, don't transgender girls have an unfair physical advantage over their teammates? So what they're saying, don't biological boys have an unfair physical advantage over girls? And this is what the WIAA, again, the state's sporting entity, says. The presence of trans female athletes on teams throughout the nation has not been shown to diminish opportunities for others. Lie. The athleticism of any female athlete, as we know, can vary widely from that of other peers. True, however, you're not taking into consideration biological men. Yeah, because that would vary slightly. Height, this is the one that gets me. Height, musculature, build and weight are a few variables that impact performance. Additional factors that contribute to a potential advantage include access to skills building opportunity at earlier ages, access to facilities and coaching, greater funding for programs and teams in certain privileged communities, chronological age, birth order, and more. For these and other reasons, some athletes have advantages and opportunities over others. Are you kidding me? So basically, the argument that the WIAA is making here is that there are whether your parents could afford to put you in a coaching program could be just as much as an advantage for a female athlete as being a biological boy. Like whether it says whether you had building opportunities at early ages and access to facilities and coaches, or you're from a privileged community. So if you're a girl who like is from a privileged community, which I assume they mean is white, and you had access to, I don't know, a playground and a gym when you were a kid, well, you have just as much advantage as a biological boy who's participating in girls' athletics. And that's just stupid. That's just dumb. And that's the WIAA. Those are the regulations and the ideology and the ideas that are governing all athletics in the state of Washington, K through 12, even at the most competitive levels. Oh, well, little Shelly, she had, you know, a basketball court at her house growing up. So it's okay if a biological boy competes against her. That's their mindset. That's insane. And that first line, the presence of trans female athletes on teams throughout the nation has not been shown to diminish opportunities for others. What rock are you living under? How many examples have there been? I mean, just in the state of Washington, a boy won one of the state track meets in Washington. So girls were disadvantaged, right? That was an opportunity. It diminished an opportunity for a girl to be a state champion. Because a boy was a state champion. The same thing happened in Oregon. A boy was a state champion. So I would call that a diminished opportunity for a girl to be a state champion, would you not? Now, I wasn't a state champion in anything athletic. I was, however, a state speech champion. Now, we competed boys and girls, which is fine. And honestly, probably unfair to the boys because girls were just of above average intelligence, obviously. But if I had been a state, and I bragged about being a state champion for a long time, if I had been a girl who was top of my field in basketball or soccer or whatever it is, and I got beat by a bunch of boys, that's a diminished opportunity. I mean, shame on the city of Bellingham. You're talking about a little six-year-old girl. And she probably doesn't understand, like, the sign and all that. I don't know what her parent, to the extent that her parents explained it to her, or whether any biological boys showed up. But a six-year-old doesn't even understand what non-conforming gender is.
I'm doubting she could read that word.
I don't know when kids can read. Oh, conforming? Well, you certainly don't know what it is, right? You certainly don't know what non-conforming means, but that's my whole point. Why do you have to put in non-conforming genders on a sign talking about six-year-olds? This is mental illness level stuff.
It really is.
And I applaud the dad for his very respectful way of pushing back against the city of Bellingham and saying, you know, you're really making it hard to raise a daughter here, mm-hmm. to raise a daughter in this environment. And these things, first of all, this is not rare. Like I said, this is the guidance from the WIAA for all athletics in the state of Washington. This is the guidance that the city of Bellingham is using even for fun summer track meets for six-year-olds. So this is widespread. This is widespread. I know the stories of men winning women's competitions. You know, it's not happening every day, but it's happening more than you might think. We only hear about a couple instances of it, but even if it happens once, that's not right. If you're going to do that, just run all the boys against the girls, put them all in the same competition, and I guarantee you, you'd have a lot of angry parents. Why? Because boys aren't the same as girls. Boys aren't the same as girls. I was listening to an Avril Lavigne song at yoga class last night. Hmm. I think it's Avril Lavigne. He was a boy, she was a girl. Can I make it any more obvious? And I'm like thinking, no, you can't. Thank you, Avril. I think that's an Avril Lavigne song, right?
That sounds right.
He was a skater boy. I said, see you later, boy. Yeah, so that's how it mm-hmm. starts. So I was like, yeah, no. It's a boy and a girl. It's insane. So thank you to these parents for sending this to me. It's ridiculous. That's absolutely absurd. I'm glad you pushed back about it and allowed us to share this, because some parents will say this happened, but they're like, I don't want to talk about it. They're like, nope, go ahead, just blur her face and it's fine. And you can use the emails and all that stuff. So wild stuff, city of Bellingham. I mean, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I did hear, I think there was five high school boys that took championships away from girls in five different states.
Yep.
So no, this is
no.
a thing.
No, this is a thing. Yeah, and they're always going to win. Uh-huh. Like, they're always going to win unless they, I don't know, trip and sprain their ankle at the start line. Like, they're going to win, right? Mm-hmm. Just wild stuff. I don't know why we're doing this to kids. It's absolutely insane. All right, before we get to unbelievable, King 5 did a story on blatant housing discrimination and didn't raise any questions or concerns about it at all in their journalism. We're going to talk about it. Actually, we got a double dose of... Can I say dub? No. Well, isn't dub like a word for a... Oh, that's a doobie. Okay, never mind. I was very confused
on why that would be not allowed.
We got a double dose of unbelievable today. But first, wow, you can see where my brain is at. First, we have been talking about the real estate market a lot, and certainly the economy. If you're in the market to buy or sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. We talk a lot about how home sellers can reach out to Wes Jones. But if you're looking to buy a home as well, Wes and his team can help you out. But Bryce and Carla, they went to sell their home in Bellevue. It was January, so the market's been a little bit not great for home sales. They were a little worried about that. They wanted to retire to Florida, but they got in touch with Wes Jones, and they were very, very happy with the results.
Just very detail oriented and never put down our property, because you could hear I-90 from our property and it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was.
Yeah, and they sold their home in 7 days for over list price. So, and now they're in Florida, so they're very, very happy with that. So if you want to, if you're looking to buy or sell a home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home and to help you buy a home. All right, there is a apartment complex in the city of Seattle that is a 55 plus community. That's fine. There's 55 plus communities all over the place, except this one is extra special. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. I will never get over the fact that in progressive areas, the solution to discrimination has come like full circle. The solution to discrimination and segregation of the past is come full circle. And the answer is, how about more discrimination and segregation? Anybody? Anybody? Like, that's their answer to everything. Let's continue to discriminate. Let's go back to segregating and all of that. So King 5 News did a story on an elder housing unit in Seattle, like an apartment complex, except this one is for what they call rainbow seniors. Gay seniors. They call them rainbow seniors. That's the first I've ever heard of that. So King 5 News headline, LGBTQ plus elder housing in Seattle gives residents a place to truly be themselves. Pride Place, as it's called, very creative, is an affordable 55-plus LGBTQ-focused living community that has a community center on its first floor. Let's read from this article, shall we? Because I saw that headline, and I was like, no way King 5 does not ask this place about the obvious. What's the obvious question? What's the obvious question?
Legality.
Thank you, Nicole. I know there's a reason that you do this job. Smart cookie. Is this legal? How can you have, we're not allowed to discriminate, right, on the basis of sexual orientation. So how can you have an apartment complex, an affordable housing complex for people who are gay? So I thought, of course, King 5 will at least, I know that they're very far left, but at least they'll ask that. No, nowhere in the article. Nowhere in the article at all. The number of LGBTQ seniors stands at 3 million today, and that number is projected to double by 2030, they report. This brings urgency to provide affordable and culturally sensitive living spaces for the aging LGBTQ plus population. Okay. But there's no hiding at the Pride Place complex. Judy Kinney, the executive director of Gen Pride, which worked with Community Roots Housing to develop Pride Place, said it took decades of dedication to open an affordable 55-plus LGBTQ living community to finally address the long-neglected needs of rainbow elders. That's their words. That's King 5, rainbow elders. I've never heard of this. Like, wow. We are just, we identify an entire group of people by their sexual orientation. Like, that's so weird to me. You get to 55 plus, or you live on this earth for 80 years and you're still being identified based on like who you were physically attracted to. It's so weird. They go on to say, according to a national nonprofit civil rights organization, nearly half, 48% of older same-sex couples faced discrimination when they applied for elder housing. Pride Place is now a way to honor the very generation that built Pride into the community it is today. It is a safe haven for rainbow elders to transition into their golden years without judgment. Pride Place has 118 affordable living units for 55-plus members of the LGBTQ community and allies. More on that in a second. They are accepting applications. So anyway, we went on Pride Place's website, take a look at the housing unit and all that stuff. Looks like a nice place to live. Looks like a nice place to live. You know, clearly, I mean, through the name, all the graphics and all of that, it says affordable housing for adults ages 55 plus in the heart of Capitol Hill, Seattle. And we scoured the website because it has on there, you know, who qualifies and all these things. And the one way that they're getting away with this legally is they say, and for allies. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're nice to gay people, if you don't discriminate against gay people, and there was nothing in the actual qualifications when you, you know, go to lease the apartment there that says, are you gay, yes or no? Are you gay, yes or no? But in effect, it's discrimination. Because you've built this entire housing unit, an affordable housing unit, when we're told we have an affordable housing crisis, and you've tailored it, you're calling it Pride Place. You've got the rainbow flag everywhere like that, and you're putting it forth to the public as a place for LGBTQ plus seniors. Do you really think any straight seniors are going to apply to live there? No, because they'll feel like they're not allowed to. They'll feel like, well, everything about this says it's a place for LGBTQ plus seniors, and I'm not LGBTQ plus, so I, you know, I'm not wanted there. So it's maybe not legally discrimination, but it is, the result is discrimination. 100%. Someone should sue over this. Maybe a senior that's having a hard time finding an affordable place to live in the city of Seattle. But there's also this broader issue that I have with this, whether it's legal or not. I don't think it's legal. I'm also not an attorney. But whether it's legal or not, it's just morally so wrong. Because again, you have this population of people, and I have no doubt that some older gay Americans did experience discrimination, did experience segregation, did experience this feeling of being othered, of otherism. And now they got through that. They're living in a place like Seattle that is so welcoming and wonderful, but they're going to live out their golden years in segregation. So like the answer to, you know, they made all this progress. You can marry the person you love in the state. I don't know if there's a more welcoming state for the gay population than Seattle and Washington State. So people who experience segregation and discrimination, now you're going to bring it full circle in their golden years and say, hey, let's resegregate you and convince you that you're not safe to live somewhere else. You're not going to be welcomed in one of the most welcoming places on earth. This is also, this kind of stuff bothers me when it comes to race as well, when they're like, oh, we got to do all this DEI stuff and, you know, push all these DEI programs and mandates at the government level. Do you think citizens of your state, Jay Inslee and the Democrats in Olympia, are racists? Do you think they're homophobes? Do you think they're sexist? And you have to push all these requirements on them. I am pretty sure that a gay 70-year-old would be perfectly welcome in any 55-plus community in the Seattle area without blatantly creating a housing thing that is absolutely discrimination. And King 5. Now, I didn't watch all their TV reports on this, but in their full article online, never one mention about what the legality of it.
I did watch the whole piece, and they did not mention that.
Thank you, Nicole, for doing your due diligence. Isn't that insane to you? Because that is the first thing that pops into my mind. Is that legal? This is just a commercial for this Pride Place thing.
Or how are they getting around it? That's my first thing. Or when she says it took us years to do this, because you were figuring out how to get around the laws.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why it took so long to figure out how you could legally do this, but still imply there was only certain people allowed here.
It is insane to me. The way this entire thing reads, Pride Place is now a way to honor the very generation that built Pride in the community it is today. It is a safe haven for rainbow elders to transition into their golden years without judgment, providing them culturally sensitive living spaces. It's like, that's not a news report. That's a commercial.
Right. And again,
that's activism.
They quote these studies. We've come up with that a couple times today, but they quote these studies, but don't actually, I mean, is somebody, you're taking somebody's word on whether they were, harassed,
felt discriminated against
when they weren't allowed to live somewhere. Right. I mean, I don't know. I just think those are random numbers. I think you just wanted this place. You wanted to discriminate and you found a way to do it and get around the loss.
Yeah. All this progress we made, all that progress we made, be damned, because now we're going to divide people on the basis of race again. We're going to divide people on the basis of sexual orientation because you don't believe in one of the most progressive places on earth that we can all coexist together. Morons. I feel bad. I'm doing a lot of name calling on the show lately, but it's so stupid. It's so stupid. And I don't know how more people don't see through that. That's wild stuff.
I just don't know how we call ourselves welcoming.
Yeah.
We're only welcoming
forced
to some.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And the government and these Democrats think that they need to force us to be welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you really don't think very highly of the people that you serve. Nope. Why do they keep putting you back in office? It's wild stuff. All right, Nicole, shall we do a double dose of unbelievable? Let's get to it. Oops. Speaking of stupid, City of Seattle paying out more money to criminal activists. We already knew in some previous protests that, related to Chaz Chopp and that whole summer of love, that the city ended up settling a lawsuit for like $10 million with some of the, in my opinion, rioters. Now, do I know that every single co-defendant participated in riotous behavior? No, but a lot of people did. So I'm going to bundle them all in. So now another settlement. Well, this isn't a settlement. This is actually a juror award. So you might recall some background here. Just remember when there was a headline that there was a pause put on Seattle's ability to enforce its graffiti ban and its graffiti laws? And it happened because there was this group suing the city of Seattle because they'd written with chalk outside one of the police precincts and it was anti-cop graffiti. And their argument was, because they got arrested, their argument was, well, that's not fair because the cops wouldn't arrest like kids who were doing rainbows and hopscotch on the sidewalk. So how can they arrest us? Well, rainbows and hopscotch are much different than saying all cops are bastards or like kill cops or whatever it is. So a jury has now awarded $700,000 to the protesters who were jailed for writing anti-police slogans in chalk on a police barricade outside a precinct. This from Fox 13 News. Four protesters who were jailed for writing anti-police graffiti in chalk on a temporary barricade near a Seattle police precinct have been awarded nearly $700,000 after a federal court jury decided their civil rights were violated. On New Year's Day 2021, the four protesters had used chalk and charcoal to write messages like, quote, peaceful protest and free them all on a temporary barricade near the police department's East Precinct. Body cam images introduced at trial showed at least three police cruisers responded to the scene to arrest the four for violating the city's anti-graffiti laws. The four spent one night in jail, but they were never prosecuted. Goes on to say Derek Tucson, Robin Snyder, Monaseri DeCastro, and Eric Moya Delgado were each awarded $20,000 in compensatory damages. Thanks, Nicole. Compensatory. That's a hard word to say. Damages and $150,000 in punitive damages when the 10-person jury returned its verdict late Friday. The lawsuit was filed in federal court against the city of Seattle and four police officers. The jury found the city and officers arrested and jailed the four as retaliation, and the officers acted with malice, reckless disregard, or oppression, denying the plaintiffs their First Amendment rights. It is not a First Amendment right to destroy property. You do not have a First Amendment right to destroy property, no matter what your message is. Somebody could go, I mean, you have a lot of people who do graffiti and they write their name, which writing your name, I guess, is harmless, but you're destroying public property. You're destroying property that does not belong to you. How is that retaliation? How is it retaliation in any sense for police to enforce the law? If you didn't want to get arrested, you shouldn't have broken the law. And now we've got a Seattle jury, a 10-person jury, unanimously saying, yep, give them money, pay them up, add punitive damages to it. They broke the law. I don't care if they were drawing pictures of flowers. I don't care what it was. Half the graffiti that you see all around the city is not, you can't even distinguish what it is. You can't even distinguish if it's gang graffiti or some sort of, you know, horrible word or whatever, or hate speech. It's like blobs. People can still get arrested for that. If you can get arrested for writing some blob bubble writing on an overpass, then yeah, you should be able to get arrested for writing. I don't care if it's chalk or charcoal or spray paint on a public property, in this case, a police barricade. I don't understand.
I might actually disagree with you a little bit on the whether it's chalk or whatever. I think it's more because they actually pointed to these officers writing I heart police in chalk somewhere else or whatever. And I do think that kids writing with chalk and nice things being said, rainbows and whatever, I don't know, it washes away. I'm not really concerned about that. I don't think it deserves a night in jail. But that's not what these people were doing.
No.
These people were part of a bigger objective to make these cops miserable, and they used chalk as part of their weapon.
Right.
And they were, you know, encouraging people to be disrespectful and make these lives miserable for these cops. So I think there was a bigger intent.
Yeah.
And again, they spent one night in jail and you deserve that much money. Go away.
No. But also, and
I'll spend a night in jail for that.
I actually think we agree. But when the cops who wrote something somewhere else, I don't know what they wrote on, but if they're city employees and they were able to write on something, is it your property? Do you have permission to write there? And with kids, like I have kids that do chalk in our neighborhood all the time. Like, I'm never going to be like, go away. But if I had an issue with it, I could just say, hey, can you not write there?
Sure.
And like wash off. That's different. But these officers work for the city of Seattle. It's city of Seattle property. So again, I do think, and all officers have the ability to use their discretion. Mm-hmm. That's why sometimes you get pulled over and you don't get a speeding ticket. And somebody else might get pulled over by a different trooper for going the same speed over and they get a speeding ticket. Mm-hmm. Officers, judges, they all have discretion. You have to have discretion. You have to, every situation, you got to look at the circumstances. Look at the circumstances and decide, does this warrant, like shoplifting. If you have a mom stealing a can of baby formula because she can't afford her kid versus a gang of thugs going into a high-end Coach store and stealing a bunch of purses. Wow, same crime, right? So you don't want those officers to have any discretion to tell the mom like, hey, we're not going to charge you, like I'll pay for this for you or whatever it is, versus the person who steals a Coach purse. Like, no. You're getting charged with shoplifting. You see how discretion factors into it? So yeah, we You're not going to arrest the kids who are writing in chalk so they can play. That's ridiculous. But the ones who are vandalizing because they don't like the cops, hell yeah, throw them in jail for a night. And Nicole's right. $700,000 because you spent a night in jail. You should spend a night in jail to correct your ridiculous behavior.
And again, if you give a mouse a cookie, right? So here we go. Oh, it worked for these guys. So now do we have to pay everybody that maybe doesn't get charged for something that they spent a night in jail for?
Right. And I feel like, disgusting. You know, the city, I'm surprised the city didn't settle this. I'm glad they actually took this to trial because that's just utterly ridiculous. But then you get a Seattle jury and that's the way of things. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to get to national news. Jamal Bowman loses his congressional seat. We'll talk about it first. I've talked about the First Mark Challenge. This is just a no-brainer. A lot of people are strapped for cash right now. The cost of everything is going up. But there's some things you can't put out of your family's budget. You have to have insurance, right? So the question is, are you handling all your insurance needs on your own, or are you going through an insurance broker like First Mark, a local insurance company that's been doing this for a very, very long time? I did the First Mark Challenge when they first started sponsoring our show. They had sponsored story shows for a long time. And I was like, why did I wait so long to do this? You know, because now all of our insurance is handled through one place. We never pay them a dime. And they do all this hard work for us to make sure that we have the best price for the insurance that we need. We get so many good comments from you guys who have taken the First Mark Challenge. This one's from Maggie. She said, after resigning from my job after a very unexpected situation at work, I decided to finally take the First Mark Challenge in April. I had also received my latest car insurance bill, which went up yet again, and I was looking to save as much money as possible. I heard you advertise First Mark for months and months, but was skeptical, would this actually save me money? I'm very happy to report I was connected with Levi at First Mark, and after he reviewed my car and home insurance, he recommended a new bundle that was half the cost and better coverage. I was so surprised and very thankful. From Maggie. Maggie, I'm glad that you took the First Mark Challenge, and that is not an atypical story. If you're doing it on your own, you don't know what is a good rate really and what isn't, and whether you're paying for insurance that you don't even need. So take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies, and they never charge you anything for their services. So take the First Mark Challenge today. Let's dip into some national news. So we talked about unhinged Jamal Bowman. The funniest tweet. So Jamal Bowman, congressman from New York, he's the one who pulled the fire alarm in Congress because he didn't want them to have to take a vote. And he was trying to delay things. And he's like, oh, I thought I was blah, blah, blah. And it was a fire alarm. And yeah, I was trying to get out that door. And then the video surfaced and obviously he did it. So anyway, so that's not the only problems with Jamal Bowman. So he's been very anti-Semitic, you know, denying some of the Hamas atrocities on October 7th. And it turns out that being anti-Semitic and anti-Israel in a congressional district where like 10% of your constituents are Jewish, doesn't go over very well. So he lost big time his primary race to a more moderate, sane Democratic challenger. So that's good news. So after his term's up, he's not going to be in Congress anymore. But New York Times never ceases to amaze me. So one of the, you know, AOC did this unhinged campaigning for him. Remember, we played it on the show earlier this week where they were like coming out to rap music and he was just swearing and she was dancing and flinging her hair and it was all just very cringy. But they were talking about how Jewish groups like AIPAC were donating to his opponent's campaign. It was like the Jewish industrial complex trying to get him out of office. And the New York Times bought into that hook, line, and sinker. Here is the original headline next to the changed headline after they got pushback from the New York Times. Bowman falls in House primary, overtaken by flood of pro-Israel money. So the suggestion there being that, you know, he didn't do anything wrong, that it was, you know, wasn't the people deciding like, hey, this guy's unhinged. It was, oh, pro-Israel money. And of course, people like our friend Ari Hoffman lost their minds over this, rightfully so. So before long, the New York Times changed its headline. Bowman falls to Latimer in a loss for progressive Democrats. Yeah, so that's more fitting. And it goes on to say, Representative Jamal Bowman of New York, a member of the House's left-wing squad, was defeated by George Latimer in a race that exposed Democratic fissures. and also, you know, exposed what a flawed candidate he was. Like, look, you know, the fire alarm shtick, maybe if that was all he had done, he wouldn't have lost his seat. But then when you are constantly spewing anti-Jewish rhetoric, left-wing policies in an area of New York that's having a lot of issues with crime, quality of life, rising costs, etc., and you're essentially a socialist, like, all those things contributed to him. And I don't know what the latest numbers are, but he was down significantly, wasn't even close, double digits. So that might even out a little bit. But so you have a more reasonable Democrat who appears headed toward the general election in that race. So I think that's a very, very good thing. I also would point out, we just have this one video, right? So remember we had the video earlier on in the week where he's yelling. He's like, ceasefire now, and he's dropping F-bombs left and right. So the context of this is weird, but he's giving his concession speech when he randomly, like, starts yelling.
Well, so somebody gets ahead of him in the crowd. Somebody brings up something he was going to talk about later. And so he yells at this supporter, I assume, for getting ahead of his speech.
Yeah, let's play it. It's crazy.
So I'm speaking way longer than I expected, but I want to say a couple more things. Number one, it's covered. Why are you messing up? Why are you messing up? Man, I'm in the zone.
Like, people are laughing, but that was crazy.
Why'd you mess this up? And he was, I mean, it appears he's serious. Yeah. Why'd you mess it up?
And they started laughing, but then he's like, says it again. Like, don't interrupt me, basically. Yeah, that's probably not the kind of guy that you want in Congress. That's weird. As I mentioned, hey, I'm sorry. I don't have a daily subscriber show poll for you today. Although I do want to, before we get to questions and comments, I do want to remind you guys, this week is it for Initiative 2066. You need to get, if you have, this would be the initiative to stop Democrats from banning natural gas in Washington state. I'm going to push out on social media some signing opportunities over the weekend. But if you have a form, you need to get it in by Friday. You need to get it postmarked by Friday so it gets to them by early next week so they can make sure that they have the necessary number of signatures. Now, we don't have an exact signature count that we can release. Let's Go Washington has that. It sounds like they're on track, but it's going to be close. So every single, whether you have a form with one signature, 10 signatures, 20 signatures, please get it back in the mail to Let's Go Wah. If you don't, like, you know how to send it in, you can look at a drop-off location, letsgowah.com, letsgowah.com. And again, we'll push out some of the signing events that are going to be happening over the weekend. And then, sorry, I need some water. And then we will talk a little bit. I mean, if Let's Go Washington is able to pull this off, that's going to put Democrats on notice. Oh, if they can get more than 400,000 signatures in that short of a time frame, because they have this system, really, it's only going to get better from here. But, you know, they took the people who signed the first six initiatives, used that information to get this initiative up and running more quickly. So imagine how quickly they're going to be able to knock out initiatives as that ground game improves, as the volunteer base improves, as their list of potential signees improves. So that's going to be remarkable. We don't know if they're going to be there. It's going to be down to the wire. Every single signature needs to be turned in.
And shout out to Kelly Palmer, right?
Kelly Palmer with Let's Go Washington is a workhorse. She's doing all these events, and obviously Brian Haywood, you know, more behind the scenes, but Kelly Palmer is like the behind the scenes workhorse of that whole movement.
Her and her children are counting all of the signatures. They are opening all of the envelopes. Yeah. It's pretty
opening
awesome.
The envelope and getting them all organized and all that stuff. So, okay. All right. Before we get to questions and comments, coming up tomorrow, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they are having a Know Your Risk webinar. This one specifically focused on inflation, which they call the silent portfolio killer. So here's how this works. Just go on to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and it'll just pop up and you can say, register for the webinar. It's totally free, no obligation. You can just learn about how inflation can impact the quality of your retirement. You know, you've saved, you've planned, you've decided here's the amount of money I have and what kind of retirement it's going to give me. But what happens when you're in an inflationary environment like this where everything costs more? So make sure that you are on track for the retirement that you want, the retirement you've worked hard for. Sign up for this Know Your Risk webinar. It's happening tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. There is still room right now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244 or go to KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right, let's get to questions and comments from the live stream and from Patreon Locals and X. Sergeant Buck with a $10 super chat. Anytime the state claims studies show X, I reach for my citation needed sign. 100%. Because even remember Monica Dingra was like, oh, studies show that police pursuits kill more people than they save. No, they don't. And also, you can't possibly know that. You can't possibly know what would have happened had a car not been pursued and continued on down the road. It's just ridiculous. And then, like, her claims were disproven and the study was even taken down, corrected, and put back up, and she wouldn't correct the record. Slow Nomo, banning ammo sales in Washington is a violation of the Second. 100%. And maybe that's why they didn't go forth. But one of the things I think that bothered me in there and bothered other people who had looked at these this data dump is, you know, she brings this up. No one jumps into the thread, not even the moderate Democrats, not even Mark Mullett. All the Democrats are on this Teams thing. No one jumps into the thread and says that's probably unconstitutional. No one, not one person. That's terrifying. Jeff Monahan, one of many thoughts. Banning ammunition, was that your note or his? Oh, I thought you were saying, like, he's put a lot of messages. One of many.
No, I think he said that himself.
Banning ammunition for firearms will go over as well as banning rainbow flags and apparel. Next, we can ban fishing hooks and gas-powered items. Yeah.
Well, they're working on the gas-powered.
They are working on that, so that's why I got to sign 2066. Bill Biz, the $20 super chat. I think and hope that the trans ideology days are numbered. I do see a momentum because more people are speaking out about it. Jared Leram, my daughter has a transgender student in her kindergarten class. Jesus, that has been a challenge to say the least. Goes into kindergarten knowing what a boy and girl was and halfway through getting frustrated when she's told she's wrong. As a parent, how do you contend with that? That's just, it's insane. And that's why that dad said, like, what am I supposed to say to my daughter? And Andy Stevens, the moment non-conformers have to compete with the boys, this insanity will come to a crashing halt. Yeah, because they'll lose, right? So if you say, like, if you're a non-conforming gender, all of you just have to compete against the boys, you're going to get smoked. But some of that isn't, you know, necessarily a problem because some of the non-conformers might be biological boys, and I do think they should be competing against the biological boys. But yeah, if you've got, you know, you don't hear an awful lot of stories about girls identifying as men who go compete against the boys. Like, they compete against the girls. You know, there's a reason for that. Son Miller, it's okay. I'm opening Straight City across the street. No, Straight City would not ever, we got Pride Place, you would never be allowed to have Straight City, a 55 plus retirement community where only straight people and their allies could be, because you would never have a gay 55 plus person be like, I want to live at Straight City, because again, it's like, you're in the name, who's welcome there and who's not welcome there. I totally think it's against the law. I'm very,
and
very
their
confident
allies
and their straight people and their allies. You people are so much. That's just Seattle in general. All right, shall we get to this really unhinged judge insanity check? Let's do it. Let's get to our closing sanity check. So this is a really sad story. There's been a couple stories lately about, you know, the rapes, murders of Americans, young teenagers by undocumented immigrants. So in Harris County, Texas, there is a case where a young girl, Jocelyn Ngare, was killed by an undocumented immigrant, raped and murdered. And so the judge in this case, Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, from the bench, goes into this tirade about how basically this is the fault of Republicans and Donald Trump. And then there's this awesome reporter for the local Fox affiliate who calls her out for, on one hand, talking, making it political, and on the other hand, saying people shouldn't make it about politics. It's a wonderful clip. I'm going to play the whole thing. Here it is.
Yeah, it was mostly Judge Lena Hidalgo talking. She says, evil happens regardless of immigration status. And she also spent time blaming Republicans for the conditions that led to Jocelyn's murder.
When the former president decided that he did not want Biden to have a win on immigration, he told his party to pull out of that agreement. So blaming things on the current immigration policy is absolutely political, and it really breaks my heart that people would politicize the sadness of that tragedy. To me, it hurts even more that they're being used as pawns in this fight over immigration that doesn't even exist, because Biden and McConnell agree. It's just that Trump won't let them move it forward.
All due respect, Judge, you said this issue shouldn't be politicized, but by pointing the finger at former President Trump and Republicans in Congress, aren't you politicizing it?
I think I answered the question. So, this is about Jocelyn. This is about her family. And if we want to talk about immigration.
You didn't answer the question. Are you politicizing this by pointing the finger at Republicans and saying it's their fault, not the fault of the Biden administration that lifted the Remain in Mexico policies?
Again, the Biden administration reached an agreement with Leader McConnell to address this, but this is not about immigration. I'm not going to feed into that.
Not going to feed into it after I just fed into it from the bench, blaming Republicans for two undocumented immigrants who allegedly strangled and murdered a 12-year-old girl in Houston. Yeah, you can't politicize something unless you're blaming the right politicians. And these are the people who are jurists, even in a state like Texas. Insane. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We've got another great show lined up for you tomorrow, so we'll see you back from the live show at noon. Remember, if you want to support our show and our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback, you can do that for just $5 a month at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com.